Yes. Not a simple answer, but a warrior's battle cry. While her response was still vibrating through him, he bit the calf of the leg he had not already bitten, letting his teeth slice through flesh and scrape bone. Then fight! He roared at her, with so much more power than sound could have conveyed, sending energy down the temporary bond he'd made between them, energy that grabbed her and held her to her dying flesh and made her live. Only once had he seen his father force the change on someone this way. Charles had been perhaps the only one who could fully appreciate what the Marok had done. He'd waited until later, until they were alone in his father's library, to ask why that one and not others.
He is needed, his father said. He was willing, and he will make a fine wolf, but mostly he is needed. We have so few submissive wolves. He will stabilize his brother's pack, stabilize his brother, too, and that will save dozens of wolves.
He'd frowned at the book he had been reading, then set it aside.
It is not such a gift to be a werewolf. I had it forced upon me, and I was angry about that for a long time. I would not do that to another person. If they don't want life badly enough to fight for it, who am I to argue? Life is hard. Dying is easier and kinder. But Neil is willing. But he was very near to making it on his own. I just gave him a boost.
He sighed.
It was probably still a wrong thing to do.
So every October, when people who wanted to be wolves died under the Marok's fangs, when they failed to survive the change, only Charles and Brother Wolf knew how deeply and why his father grieved. When they had to carry out the more horrible tasks of killing those who changed but could not control their wolf, Charles understood that his father was wise. If a person could not fight through the change on their own, what chance did they have to control their wolf nature? Neil had managed, but it had not been easy for him. This woman was hampered not by her nature, but by the blood she had shed to protect her children. Brother Wolf knew that she would be a fine werewolf, so Charles used what his father had showed him and pushed her through the change. He bit her again, an arm this time, while her mate clung to his grandfather and wept. Hosteen watched Brother Wolf over Cage's shoulder with a rage hidden in his eyes. He dropped his gaze after a moment, because Brother Wolf was the dominant wolf in this room.
What happened?
Asked Max, still angry that he'd been ordered away. Anna had hauled the kids all the way out of the house and up the street toward where Max told her there was a park. Changing someone wasn't painless and generally involved screaming and other scary noises that no kid needed to hear their mother make. Max had been especially angry when she'd made him leave the house.
Fey magic, Anna said.
She'd gleaned a little from Brother Wolf.
What does that mean?
Muttered Max, kicking a rock off the sidewalk. He caught his wandering brother by the hand and tugged him out of the road.
No, Michael. You walk next to us. Stay on the sidewalk, no matter how cool some rock might be.
It wasn't a rock, said Michael with dignity. It was a penny.
Sorry, buddy. You need to stay with us.
Max let out his breath.
So, let's assume fey magic doesn't mean anything to me. What does it mean to you?
Charles says that someone, some fey someone, put a magical compulsion on your mother.
When did he tell you? Max asked sharply. Mackie, put that down. You don't know where it's been. Tell me, Anna. Did you know that when you came in through the window? Because it takes a werewolf 15 minutes to half an hour to change to a wolf. And he was a wolf when we went downstairs.
He is my mate, Anna told him, patient with his sharpness. His blistering anger was caused by worry and frustration that he couldn't protect his mom. We can communicate without talking.
Telepathy?
Max's voice was scathing. Look, she huffed in exasperation. Werewolf. Me. Magic darn near strong enough to make your mother try to kill you. And you were balking at telepathy. Charles is my mate, and that means we share a spiritual bond. Far as I've been able to find out, that bond works a little differently for everyone. Charles and I can find each other in the middle of an Atlantic hurricane, and we can communicate some things.
Men,
said Mackie, smugly, reacting to Anna's tone rather than the content of their conversation.
Can't live with them, can't live without them.
Shut your pie hole, punk kid, Max said, thumping her on the head with the palm of his hand.
I'm telling Mama you said shut your pie hole, Michael said. Shut your pie hole is a bad word.
Shut your pie hole is three words, Michael, said Mackie. Undaunted, Michael said, I'm telling Mama you used three bad words.
You do that, kid, Max told him, sounding subdued. I hope you do that.
He glanced at Anna and said, So, tell me about this fey magic that made my mother try to kill us. I thought the fey were all locked up. Anna snorted. They locked themselves up. I don't know who got your mom or why. Maybe she can help with that when she...
Don't you mean if she?
He didn't complete the sentence.
It could go wrong,
she admitted. Lots of people don't make it. But your mother has courage and willpower. She fought to keep you safe. Apparently, she could stave off the compulsion by hurting herself. That's why she was so cut up, why she stabbed herself before telling you to take the kids away.
But she made it, Max said.
Why didn't they just call the ambulance? Why change her?
She saved you, agreed Anna. But it took us too long to get here. By the time Charles found her, she was dying from blood loss. He swallowed.
Mom is dying?
Asked Mackie. Darn it, thought Anna. Forgot the little ones were listening in.
I thought she was turning into a werewolf like Annalie Hastin,
Mackie said.
Dying is like Mrs. Glover. Dying is... gone forever.
Her voice rose and wobbled. Her little brother picked up on it and started to cry.
Mrs. Glover was nice. I loved Mrs. Glover. She gave me candy.
Max looked overwhelmed. Anna gathered herself together and said, I don't know who Mrs. Glover is, but your mother is strong. Brother Wolf told me so. And he never lies.
Who is Brother Wolf? Asked Max.
She hadn't meant to bring Brother Wolf out in the open. His presence confused people who had been werewolves for centuries.
He's the big wolf, said Mackie. The one who made Annalie Hastin listen.
Anna tilted her head at the little girl who smelled like witch. Witch-born and observant, too.
That was Charles, Anna's husband, said Max.
You are both right, she said. That was Charles and Brother Wolf.
You call your husband Brother Wolf when he is in his wolf shape?
Anna decided that a technical discussion would lower the emotional distress and possibly give the kids some useful information. Charles wouldn't mind. Brother Wolf wasn't a secret.
No, she said.
I call Charles Charles, and I call him Brother Wolf Brother Wolf. It has nothing to do with the shape they wear, or that they share the same body.
I'm lost in an episode of Doctor Who,
said Max, without even a hint of humor. Explain that to me. Werewolves, Anna told him, have two natures, the human part and the wolf part, but the wolf isn't like a real wolf. It's a lot more angry than that.
How did you tell a kid his mom was going to be a monster? Maybe she should have thought this through better.
Like the Incredible Hulk,
Mackie said thoughtfully.
nice mommy and werewolf mommy. We're not supposed to bother Anali Hastin when he's grumpy.
Anna looked at her for a moment.
Exactly.
Most werewolves learn to control the wolf, the Hulk part, in a year or two.
Does great-grandfather have a brother wolf?
Asked Michael.
I don't know, Anna told him.
Most werewolves don't actually think of themselves as two people, not like my husband does. But he was born a werewolf, and it made him strange in a lot of ways. To him, his wolf is a separate being who lives with him, inside his body.
I thought werewolves weren't genetic, said Max. Cage isn't a werewolf, and neither is Joseph, even though Joseph's father is.
Anna nodded. You're right, except in Charles's case. His mother was Flathead, one of the Salish tribes, a wise woman with magic of her own. Werewolf women can't have babies, but she did anyway.
As I will.
She died when Charles was born.
I could be a werewolf puppy, said Michael, thoughtfully. Then no one could steal my toys.
That happened a long time ago, said Mackie impatiently. Don't be a baby. Mrs. Glover made Joshua give you back your robot and say I'm sorry.
Michael's bottom lip stuck out.
I liked Mrs. Glover.
Tears gathered.
Mrs. Glover was my teacher, Mackie said. She liked me better than she liked you.
Shut up, you freaks, snapped Max. Shut up.
Shut up is a bad word,
said Michael. Incipient tears interrupted by the chance to point out his older brother's fault.
Just shut up anyway.
Anna touched his arm.
Who is Mrs. Glover?
My teacher, wailed Mackie. She died and never came back. She did too, like me,
said Michael, crying in earnest.
And now Mommy is dying, Mackie said. Everyone is dying.
Stop it, said Max, tightly. Just stop.
Your teacher where?
Anna asked. Mackie might be old enough to go to elementary school, but Michael wasn't.
Preschool daycare, said Max.
They both go, different classes. Mackie is 5, but she was born after the September deadline, so she'll go into kindergarten next year.
So your mom leaves work, picks up the kids, and then goes home, right?
Anna said.
That's right,
Max said. I get home an hour or so after they do.
Hey, Mackie, was Mom okay when she picked you guys up at the daycare?
Mackie had been bickering with Michael, but Max's question made her fall silent.
Mackie?
Mackie was in the timeout chair, said Michael. Her teacher was mad at her, but Mommy wasn't.
Yes, she was,
said Mackie in a small voice.
She didn't sound like it when she talked to Miss Baird, but when Mommy was talking to me in the car, she got mad. She didn't talk to me at all. And then she sent us to watch TV.
That's unusual? Anna asked. Max nodded.
Mom doesn't do the silent treatment. Not ever.
My grandmother, her mom, abused it. Mom swore she'd never do that to us. She yells.
Once she threw dishes at Daddy,
Michael said.
But she hit the floor instead of him. Then he laughed and cleaned up the glass. I didn't touch the glass.
She wasn't trying to hit him, just make a point, said Max. But yeah, Mom is loud. She doesn't do the silent treatment, and she doesn't like the kids to watch TV by themselves.
Half hour a day, said Mackie. Michael gets a show, and I get a show, unless we're granddads. There's the park.
And Mom or Cage or I watch those shows with them, Max said. She'd never just send them in on their own. He glanced at Anna and gave her a half smile. Especially not after Grandma let them watch Supernatural. Michael had nightmares. She says she can't control what they watch at their granddad's house, but she can make sure they're not watching grown-up shows at home. The park was small and carefully tended, without a single bit of plant life. It was beautiful anyway.
There were two fountains on either side of a play area that was covered with a giant roof held over the playground equipment on painted steel poles. It was pleasantly warm right now, but Anna expected that anything left out in the sun in high summer would be hot enough to burn skin. A comfortable number of children were playing on the equipment, with a few adults sitting on the ubiquitous benches set around playgrounds to encourage parents to watch over their children. One woman talked with extreme animation into her cell phone, while a man of approximately the same age was deeply engrossed in a book. Michael and Mackie bolted for the play fort as soon as their feet hit the sand of the playground at the edge of the sidewalk. Evidently, that was where walking with grown-ups was no longer necessary.
"Tell me about your mother," Anna said. "Where does she work?" "She's a trainer, like Cage," he said with a wry smile. "But instead of training horses, she trains people to sell things. She's very good at it. She's part owner in a company that sells that training to other companies. And because she really is very good at selling things, lots of companies hire her company."
"People like her," he said. They'd stopped on the edge of the sidewalk, right where Mackie and Michael had taken off. But now Max walked with quick determination toward an empty bench.
"She says everyone likes her because she's good at selling herself, too."
He swallowed and said, without humor, "Except for Hostein. Cage says that if she really were selling herself, she'd have the shakes at her feet with piles of money. Then she says, 'There's that one came to buy a filly from you. He'd have bought me, too.' And then Cage says..." He looked at Anna.
"It's not going to be like that anymore. You can't bring people back from the dead. They come back different."
Anna pursed her lips and then nodded. "Life changes people more than death does, in my experience. 10 years from now, you wouldn't see her the same way you do now any more than you see her the same way you did when you were Michael's age." Max's face flushed. They'd reached the bench, but he didn't sit down.
"You don't have to patronize me. I understand you're 1 million years old like Cage's grandfather, and that means you know so much more than I do. But this is different from being a child looking at a parent. I've seen Hostein when he isn't playing human, and I don't want to look in my mother's eyes and know she's thinking how good my liver would taste."
"I'll be 26 on my next birthday," Anna said mildly. "That gives me 10 years on you. Take it from me, anyone who lives with you is going to occasionally wonder how your liver might taste, and not because they're hungry. It comes with being a teenager. You inspire violence in the hearts of those who love you. It mostly goes away when you hit 20.
He laughed reluctantly. "Seriously," she said, "your mother's basic nature won't change. She is quick-thinking and fierce. She will probably still throw dishes at Cage and hit the floor with them to make a point. She'll have to learn to pull her throws, though, or she'll leave marks on the floor. She loves you and respected you enough to know that you were capable of protecting those two kids until Cage could get home to help you. None of that will be different."
He dropped down on the bench.
"This never would have happened if she hadn't married Cage," he said bleakly. "Our lives were normal until she met him."
"It's a little too early to look for causes," she told him, deciding to respond to the logic of his statement instead of the emotion. She sat down beside him and looked at the fountain instead of at him. "It might have been an attack aimed at your great-grandfather and his pack. Or maybe your mother was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Although, I admit, when someone connected with werewolves is attacked by supernatural means, my first thought is that it has something to do with the supernatural elements in the victim's life. What do you know about Hostein's pack? Have they done anything recently that might attract the attention of the Fae?"
"I don't know anything about the werewolves," Max said. "Hostein Sani hates my mother. He did not attend the wedding. He hates her because she... because we're white, and Cage divorced his proper wife and married my mother. He doesn't take it out on the Munchkins, but he and I don't have anything to say to each other."
"I can't address how Hostein feels about the color of your skin or his son's previous marriage. I don't know him that well," Anna told him.
but I can tell you that today, the thing that bothered him about her is that she's witchborn. In the house, steeped in the magic of the Fae, she hadn't been able to smell it as well. But out in the open air, sitting next to him, she could smell the scent of witch faintly. She didn't smell magic as well as Charles, but witches had a distinctive odor, a sweet, almost floral tang that emanated from their skin. He snorted. She isn't a witch. It's just a story that my grandmother liked to tell, my mother's mother. She ran away from home when she was a kid. She never did tell anyone where she came from. She made up a story about a wicked witch for my mother, so that my mother never went looking for them. Nope, Anna said. Sorry to blow your worldview, but you can't afford to be ignorant on this issue. There are witches, good and bad witches. There isn't much worse than a bad witch. If her mother was a wicked witch, your grandmother was smart and lucky. I can smell it a little on you. I expect that Hosteen can smell it too. She contemplated that a moment. Being married to Charles had given her impetus to read up on the native peoples. Hosteen is Navajo. The Navajo have a healthy fear of witches and their ilk. My understanding is that there have been and still are some very evil Navajo witches. Maybe Hosteen doesn't like it that your mother isn't Native American. I don't know him well enough to tell, but it was the witch blood he was objecting to when Charles offered to change your mother. Anna met Max's eyes. The Navajo and the Hopi of almost all of the Native American cultures have preserved their identity the best. They walk close to the earth and remember what our modern society likes to forget, that normal humans are at a grave disadvantage when they run into the nastier things that live hidden in this world. Hosteen was taught as a child that anyone who dabbles in magic is evil. It is hard to put aside such teachings, no matter how old you get, especially when you have real evidence that they are mostly true.
I'm a witch? He asked, sounding more intrigued than alarmed,
which just meant that he really didn't know anything about witches. Anna hoped he never had to learn. Anna shrugged. I can only tell you what I smell, but witch blood doesn't always mean you can work magic. My understanding is that the power doesn't beget power. Two witches can have 10 children, and none of them have power, only to have it show up generations later. The men in the family are usually a lot weaker than the women.
Could a Fae know that Mom's descended from witches? Could that be why someone tried to kill us?
I'm not an expert in the Fae, Anna said wryly. All I know is that some of them are freaking scarily powerful, and some of them, well, not so much. Guess which ones are the most likely to be horrible?
Yeah, Max said. It's easier to be horrible if you can squash everyone who tries to stop you.
They sat in silence for a little while.
How long before we can go home? Asked Max.
I don't know, she said. Someone will come for us, or Charles will let me know. It might be a few minutes or a couple of hours. Magic is unpredictable.
No news is good news, though.
He nodded.
Okay, so Mom was fine this morning. She worked in her office today, ate lunch there. I know because she took her lunch with her this morning. She drives directly from her work to the daycare. And the spell, do you say spell?
Works for me,
Anna admitted. So the spell hit her sometime after she left home this morning.
Michael and Mackie disagree about how she felt about finding out that Mackie had gotten into trouble, she said. Is he good at reading people?
He is observant, Max agreed, and Mackie was feeling guilty, but if Mackie thought she was mad at her later, she was probably right.
So, if she wasn't upset at Mackie when she picked her up in the classroom, but that changed in the car, Anna stopped and shook her head.
I don't know enough about the Fae to even hazard a guess.
Maybe the spell was laid on her a year ago in a day because she cut off someone in traffic.
We're just speculating, Max said after a minute. It doesn't matter if we're wrong or right, so let's say it happened on the drive home from the daycare. How far away is the daycare?
About 3 miles, maybe four.
Anna focused on the children playing some sort of tag that was growing to include most of the kids who were past the toddler stage. Something was nagging at her.
Mrs. Glover, Anna said.
What?
Tell me about Mrs. Glover. Something evidently happened to her?
She was Maggie's teacher at the daycare. She killed herself a couple of weeks ago. It was bad, really gruesome. She lived in a house with one of those two-story entryways. She hanged herself from the banister at the upper floor. Apparently someone forgot to close the door when the police got there, and photos hit the internet. He scuffed his foot. People who work with kids need to think about the kids before they do something like that.
It was probably not connected. People committed suicide all the time. Still, did she leave a suicide note?
He shook his head. No, no. The police looked pretty closely at her husband the first couple of days. Maybe they still are. But I heard he was across the country giving a lecture to a room of engineers when she died.
He paused. I saw her the day before she died because Mom sent me to pick up the kids. She was smiling and cheerful, just like always. She told me that Mackie needed to bring an old shirt for a painting smock for a class project they were supposed to start the next day.
Anna thought about it. People did commit suicide in all sorts of ways. Hanging didn't seem like an impulsive thing, like shooting yourself with a gun. Hanging would take more time, and it would give someone a fair chance to reconsider. Find a rope, figure out somewhere to hang yourself, climb over the banister and hope that you don't slip. If you fall before you've tied yourself properly, you might just hit the floor below and break a leg or something.
Anything else unusual happen at the daycare lately? She asked.
Mackie swarmed up the rope net, then paused and climbed back down so she could help Michael up.
I'm talking about disappearances, deaths, anything like that?
Not that I know of, Max said.
Then he called out,
Mackenzie, Veronica, Sonny, don't you try climbing up there on the outside. Whatever you do, Michael will do. You'll both break your necks.
Like Mrs. Glover.
There was that boy, he said. In Mackie's class. He died in a car accident last month. He and his two brothers and his mom were hit by a semi when his mom crossed into the oncoming traffic. There was a rainstorm that day. Mom says Scottsdale drivers can't drive in the rain.
Anna's phone rang, and she answered it.
Might be useful if you came back, Charles said. Cage is helping his wife to clean up a bit, and then we're all going to be staying at Hostein's place for a while.
He hung up without saying anything more, a sign that all was not going well.
You heard that?
Anna asked Max. He shook his head. She was getting too used to being surrounded by werewolves.
Charles said gather the kids and head back, she told him. Your mom is over the first hurdle. We're all going back to Hostein's ranch.
He closed his eyes briefly and heaved a sigh of relief.
I'll gather the rugrats, he said, standing up.
Why are we all going to the ranch?
Because a new wolf needs help controlling herself, Anna told him. A more dominant werewolf can help her keep her impulses in line until she can do it herself. You might be staying there for a few months. At least your mom might be staying there for a while. Also, I expect, they want to keep an eye on all of you until they figure out if there is likely to be another attack on you and your mom.
Great, Max muttered. Mom will be ecstatic. She and Anali Hostein are the best of friends.
He got up, took a step toward the play fort, and then said,
Mom's gonna be okay?
She wouldn't lie to him.
I don't know. This means that she made the change. But she still got to prove that she isn't a risk to anyone, that she has the willpower to control the wolf.
He gave Anna a half-worried smile.
Cage says my mother has more willpower than Mahatma Gandhi.
He's not usually happy about it, but I'm thinking it might mean that she'll be all right. Anna smiled. Go get the kids. They got back to the house, and Charles, on his own 2 feet, was standing outside with a clearly fuming Hosteen. The latter noticed the kids and altered his body language to neutral. She could still smell his ire, but the kids were human, and they would see only what he wanted them to.
Is Chelsea okay?
She asked Charles. He nodded, though the grave expression on his face wasn't reassuring. Either he was worried about Chelsea still, or he was unhappy with Hosteen. Hosteen looked at Mackie and Michael and schooled his voice into something gentle.
You are all coming to my house for a little bit, until we find out what happened to your mom.
It is Jindy, Anali Hosteen, said Mackie.
And Hosteen winced.
There are some words that should not be said, he told her.
Don't start that, said Max loudly. She said it today, and she thinks that's what caused Mom to go nuts, so don't start with that. Hosteen's eyes flashed yellow, and he showed his teeth.
Careful, boy, he said.
Stop, Charles told him. Now is not the time. Listen to his words, old man, and let the rest go. Hosteen shot Charles a look that raised the hair on the back of Anna's neck. Charles looked at Mackie.
Your Anali Hosteen is right.
It is not wise to speak the name of evil where it might hear you. But you didn't call evil spirits to your mother. They don't listen to children.
Charles was intimidating at the best of times. Mackie stepped behind Max and peered out at him warily.
You are Brother Wolf?
She asked.
He shook his head. Brother Wolf is sleeping. I am Anna's husband, Charles.
The Chinti are afraid of you, she told him. Anna says.
Is that what Anna said? He asked. Anna could tell that he was smiling, though his lips never moved. Then it must be so.
You can't come hunt
Mackie stopped and glanced at Hosteen.
You can't hunt evil things with Anna and me. You'll take away all of our fun.
You're planning on hunting down the bad guys? Charles asked.
When I'm grown up,
Mackie confirmed.
He nodded. All right, I'll stay home, but only if you agree to wait until you are at least your brother's age,
he tipped his head at Max, before you go looking for trouble. Otherwise, your Anali Hosteen will follow you to protect you. The evil things are even more afraid of him than they are of me. She slid around Max and caught up Hosteen's hand.
Okay, I don't want to hunt bad things today anyway.
Let's go back, Hosteen said to her. You and I and Michael,
Yes, she said. Max is coming too.
It wasn't quite a question.
Max is coming too,
Hosteen agreed, without looking away from his granddaughter.
And so are your mom and dad.
So Max should come with us to pack,
she said, with more authority.
I can pack on my own squirt, Max told her.
So can I,
she told him, as she followed Hosteen and Michael into the house.
I'm just helping Michael.
I don't need help,
Anna could hear Michael complain. Max let the door close behind them, took a deep breath, and then headed in.
I wonder what made her say Chindi before her mother got angry, said Charles, thoughtfully.
Chapter 4. Anna drove with Charles and Max in the truck. Charles rode in the middle, which wasn't comfortable for him. His long legs didn't fit easily anywhere. But better, she thought, than forcing poor Max to squish between virtual strangers. Charles could have driven, of course, but he had just shaken his head when she'd suggested it. At a guess, changing Chelsea had left him pretty raw. He wouldn't say it, though, in front of Max. Hosteen had packed the 2 youngest children, Cage and Chelsea, pale but freshly showered, in the BMW. Anna followed them through the streets of Scottsdale. Mom looked okay, said Max, not looking at Charles.
It varies from person to person, Anna said, but I suspect she's got about 2 hours before she sleeps like the dead for a good long while. She'll wake up for a couple of hours and sleep the rest of the day for 2 or 3 days. Then she should be mostly back to normal.
Charles grunted assent, and that unfriendly sound shut Max down completely. Rather than start more awkwardness, Anna chose to keep quiet, and they drove to the ranch in silence. Maggie was waiting for them at the door with a tiny woman who was more or less Anna's age. She had Navajo features and skin tone, but honey blonde hair. Maggie followed Hosteen and Cage into the house, but the other woman waited for them.
Ernestine, said Max with relief and uncomplicated affection. He trotted over to her and gave her a hug.
How's the hopes? She asked, returning the hug.
Okay, he said. Is there food?
Isn't there always? She said. Go on in the kitchen and help yourself.
After he'd retreated, she greeted Anna and Charles.
How are you? You must be the Cornicks. Charles, I doubt you remember me, but I met you once when I was about Maggie's age. I'm Maggie's great-niece, Ernestine. I'm usually only here from 6 to 4 every day, but today I'll be here all day, all night, and all tomorrow. They've called me in as the heavy reinforcements.
She grinned and opened her arms to showcase all 100 pounds of her. Then she stepped forward, and from the high ground of 2 steps up, she leaned forward and kissed Charles on the cheek.
Chelsea is my friend, she said when she was done. Her cheeks were a little red, but she spoke with dignity. Austin would have let her die, so I know who to thank.
Charles didn't say anything, so Anna smiled.
Always glad to be of service.
They retreated to their room. Charles heaved a sigh of relief as soon as the door closed behind them.
Tough day at the office, sweetheart?
Anna asked. Better than it could have been, he told her. Nobody died. Any day with no deaths is a good day. I need to call Da and let him know what's happened.
When Anna came back from the bathroom, where she'd scrubbed off some blood she hadn't realized she was wearing, he'd already put his phone away.
That was a short call, she said. He didn't answer, Charles told her, so I left a message for him to call me back. If you're done, I'm gonna shower.
He had more blood on him than she did. Not on his clothes, which had returned clean as usual when he changed back, and he'd washed his hands and face at Cage's house, but there were rusty stains just under his collar.
That would be good, she said,
and he smiled at her. He came out 15 minutes later, freshly shaved, with his hair damp. He didn't have a great deal of facial hair, but enough that he shaved every day. His eyes looked tired, but he'd lost that grim edge.
I wonder, he said, if Joseph is around.
They tracked down Ernestine in the kitchen. She glanced at the clock.
He's usually awake by now. He's still got the same suite as he was in the last time you were here. Do you remember how to get there?
She shook her head.
Don't know what's going to become of this family once he's gone. He's the glue holding everyone together.
Cage and Hosteen have always paced around each other like a pair of gamecocks. But since Cage and Chelsea got married, the feathers fly a lot more often. Beside Anna, Charles went still.
Gone?
Asked Anna, tentatively.
Is he sick?
Dying, said Ernestine, surprised, then a little horrified.
I thought you knew. I thought that's why you came. I'm so sorry. He was diagnosed with lung cancer about 5 years ago. He fought it off with chemo for a while, but it came back with a vengeance a few months ago.
Charles didn't say anything, just turned and headed back through the kitchen door. The house smelled of wolf and sage, but as they proceeded, the smells became more astringent. Disinfectants, medicines, and beneath it all, the scent of illness and dying. Charles's face didn't
change, but his hand tightened on hers. He knocked lightly on a door.
Come in, come in,
said a shaky voice.
This suite was bigger than the one she shared with Charles, a full apartment within the house. The first room was a sitting room, decorated in a sleekly modern Asian style, simple furniture built of glass and steel and dark wood. Here, as throughout the house, the floor was a dark wood, but instead of throw rugs and the occasional Persian rug, there was a huge hand-woven wool rug in a traditional Navajo pattern. The walls were painted a slate gray that matched the shade in the rug too well for accident. On the wall opposite the door was a large framed black-and-white photograph of a young man on a bucking horse. The horse was a dark dappled gray, and all four of his feet were off the ground, back feet headed left and front feet right. The hooves were a little ragged, and no horse that was in Charles's barn ever was that ungroomed. But on this horse, all the ragged hair was appropriate and oddly beautiful. He wasn't a pampered pet. He was something wild. There was joy and power and grace in the 1,000-pound animal as he was caught floating in the air. On his back was a young man, a sweat-stained cowboy hat on his head and a foot-long black braid floating in the wind. His boot-clad feet were just ahead of the cinch that held the saddle on the horse, heels down. One hand was up in the air, and the other gripped a thick rope that connected his hand to the bosal on the horse's nose. The hat shadowed his eyes, but his grin was fierce and as wild as the horse he rode. On the bottom right corner of the photo, someone had written, July 24th, 1949. The rider wasn't Cage, obviously, but the resemblance was marked. Charles had gone ahead while she paused to look at the photo, and she jogged through the rest of the room and caught up to him as he went through the next doorway. The bedroom had been decorated with the same serene feel as the sitting room, but all that peace couldn't compete with the hospital bed that squatted in the middle of the room. Various medical devices stacked around the bed wheezed and beeped and flashed lights, presumably doing their jobs. A skeletally thin man lay in the center of the bed, his head raised so he could see intruders as they came in. His hair was iron gray, worn as Charles sometimes did, in two neat braids that lay over his shoulders. His face was layered in wrinkles, like a sharp hay, features obscured beneath the straps that held his oxygen tubes below his nose.
"Joseph," said Charles softly.
The man in the bed moved his head, and his eyes opened. For a moment, he blinked foggily, as though he'd been lost in dreams, and then his gaze sharpened.
"Charles." The voice was so quiet, Anna didn't know if a human would have heard it. "I should have told you. I know. But I didn't want to make you come if you didn't want to. Or I didn't want the only reason you came to be because I was dying. Pride, you know." He spoke in rapid groups of words with pauses between to breathe. Charles didn't say anything, but fathomless sorrow gathered in his eyes. Anna knew that Joseph really was his friend, because he saw it too. The old man smiled. "I intended to be one of those sweet old people, you know, the kind who do exactly what they're told, and eventually they lie down and die when it's convenient for everyone."
"I remember," said Charles, and his face softened into a reluctant smile. "As I recall, it was when you were getting on that rank stallion at the Half Moon on a dare. I told you that I'd feel bad burying you the next morning."
"I rode that horse," Joseph said.
"And herded cattle with him the next week," Charles said. "It was still a stupid thing to do."
Joseph started to speak, but he had to stop and breathe for a minute.
Then he said, "Too much pride and stubbornness," he said.
"More than once,"
agreed Charles.
"You'll be,"
Joseph grinned,
"happy. I'm proud and stubborn, as always. Won't go to the hospital as Maggie wishes. Too many evil spirits from all the dead people. I will die here and haunt this house until the old man lets Maggie burn the place down."
He coughed lightly.
"In the old days, they'd have kissed my cheek and then left me in the desert to die. Then my family would hire some Hopi or white man too stupid to know the dangers of handling the dead to go deal with the body. Now we're caught between modern ways and the old. If I die here, only fire will keep my evil ghost from making everyone miserable. And they are too rational to do that."
He laughed, a sound that tried hard to be a cackle, but he didn't have the air to make that much noise. Charles rocked back on his heels.
"I could take you out to the desert, Joseph, but I don't know about the kiss."
Joseph laughed again. Then he started coughing, and suddenly all sorts of equipment squealed and beeped. Charles gave the machines an irritated look, and they all shut up. Anna, half horrified, hoped that they had just gone back to their jobs of monitoring Joseph and pumping him full of medications for whatever he needed. But she was afraid not. Their silence felt very permanent. Charles waded through the wires and tubes to put his hands on Joseph's chest. Joseph stiffened as his eyes met her mate's. Not a gentle stiffening, but like a person who'd stuck a table knife in a wall socket. All that was missing were the sparks and the smoke. Charles narrowed his gaze and started chanting softly in a language that no one except for him had spoken for nearly 200 years. A dialect of the Flathead tongue that had died when his mother's tribe had succumbed to one of the sicknesses that the Europeans had brought with them to the New World when he was a very young man. He could have been saying anything, but Anna's wolf stirred, called to attention by the sharp ozone breath of the sacred that Charles occasionally could tap into when, as Charles put it, the spirits so moved him. Joseph stopped coughing eventually, leaving Charles's soothing voice the dominant sound in the room. There were no plants here, but Anna could smell pine. Some impulse urged her to touch Charles, so she did. The back of his neck was the easiest skin to reach, so she put her fingertips there. She closed her eyes and felt his voice sink into her bones. Unable to resist, she lent her song to his. She didn't have the language, so she hummed an alto descant to his bass almost song. The chant was Native American, so it didn't follow European chords or patterns. But that didn't bother her. She'd accompanied Charles when he played or sang the songs of his childhood before, though never had it summoned magic. As she found the right notes, it seemed to her that the chant grew stronger. Charles stopped singing abruptly, and she fell silent at the same time. She may not have understood what he was doing, but the connection between them had told her when the song was finished. On the bed, Joseph's breathing was no longer labored. He was relaxed, and his color was better. Anna let her arm fall away from her mate and flexed her fingers to rid herself of a last sharp tingle of some sort of magic that had nothing to do with Pack and everything to do with her husband's odd and possibly unique heritage of witch, shaman, and werewolf.
"What did you do to me?"
Joseph asked in a hushed voice. His eyes were wide.
I have no idea, admitted Charles. You know how it is when the spirits kick me in the direction they want me to run. Whatever it is, it probably won't last long.
He paused.
Or do anyone here any good.
You have always been such an optimist, said Joseph, amusement lighting his eyes.
I remember that about you.
Charles frowned at him.
I didn't heal you. If you didn't want to die of lung cancer, you could have quit smoking 50 years ago when I told you to.
Joseph laughed, but there was compassion in his expression.
I'm 80-odd years old, my friend. Something is gonna kill me soon. It might as well be cancer.
Then the laughter left his face.
Unless you've been listening to my father and intend to change that.
Being a werewolf is not a panacea to death, said Charles. Quite the opposite, in fact. I would never force it upon anyone, even if I were so lost to right and wrong to try. Such an act carries a death penalty. Being my father's son means I have no defense against charges of changing someone against his will.
My father thinks that you need no such defense, since you are your father's son.
Which was almost what Hosteen had said to Charles when he'd driven them in from the landing strip. How terrible, Anna thought, to watch your child die, knowing you had the means to save him, and he wouldn't let you do so.
Then he does not know my father, Charles said, as he had to Hosteen. I am the last person he would make allowances for. Because I am his son, the Marok could not allow me to break his laws.
Yes, said Joseph. So I told him. But I also know you, and not even a death sentence would stop you from doing what you think is right.
You don't want this,
said Charles, gesturing to himself.
You never did. If you have changed your mind, I'll be very happy to help.
Charles had offered to change Joseph before. Neither man said it, but Anna heard it all the same. There was a little silence, and then Joseph, who had relaxed against the pillow, gave a small smile.
So, you were here to buy a horse for your wife's birthday. I have come here to see my old friend, Charles said, to introduce my wife to him, and to say goodbye.
Joseph sighed deeply.
First good breath I've drawn in months. Thank you.
He took a deep breath, held it, and let it out.
My father is a good man. I love him. He tries to do what is best for everyone. And he leads his family and his pack with his heart. But he also thinks that he is right and doesn't always give weight to the opinions of others. I will die when my time is here. And it is very near. What you have done for me does not change that.
It wasn't a question, not quite. Charles said,
no.
Joseph said,
I can feel death's wind in my face. And I heard an owl cry every night this past week. My father's will cannot change that.
He drew in another breath and smiled directly at Anna.
Enough of my drama. I'm tired of it. Charles, you have not introduced me to the pretty lady.
She hadn't felt ignored. Both men had been aware of her. Joseph had been studying her. But they had had unfinished business to wade through before bringing her into it. Charles nodded, gravely.
Anna, this is my good friend, Joseph, who pulled me into more mischief than he should have been able to. Joseph, this is my mate, Anna, who is a gift an old foolish wolf like me doesn't deserve. Heaven forbid that we should get what we deserve, Joseph said, examining Anna. You have a beautiful song in your heart, he said at last. I am grateful that my old friend would find such as you, because he is too often alone. Don't break his heart, or my ghost will haunt you for the rest of your days.
It isn't me who is breaking his heart right now, she told him. Joseph nodded.
But that is the dual gift of love, isn't it? The joy of greeting and the sorrow of goodbye.
He narrowed his eyes at Charles.
You came here to buy this woman a pretty horse. Something exotic. A horse that will be living art?
He didn't sound like he approved.
Arabians, said Charles, following Joseph's conversational trail without protest, are the cats of the horse world. Anna doesn't need to dominate. She will enjoy having a partner rather than a servant.
An Arabian, said Joseph to Anna, can be your best friend. He will not desert you when you need him. He will come to your call and be the wings that take you where you need to go.
Charles laughed. She thought he laughed like that only with her, and she was grateful to be wrong. How terrible to live centuries and never laugh with your whole body.